This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, it's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young boy!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Roan. No Carter for this episode of the podcast, but we will be recording Wednesday night. You can check that out either live on my Twitter feed at 7 p.m. Eastern. I don't know how to run all that stuff. Carter is the brains behind this operation. I'm just the idea guy. And I got one of my bright ideas today. I was reading a fantastic feature in Dime Mag by a friend of the podcast, Martin Rickman. And I was like, hey, we should talk about this. It is a great story on Colin Sexton, kind of the origins of his career and the ways that his family has impacted him. Growing up and kind of developed him into the person and the player he is. So to talk about that article is Martin. How's it going, buddy?
Man, if we lost the brains and you're already the idea guy, I have no idea what I'm going to bring to the table.
Well, you've already brought something to the table, which I really, really do appreciate.
Joy de vivre, je ne sais quoi, so to speak.
You're someone to sit there while I talk to myself, which is really
podcast. Yeah, the inner voice, we'll call it that.
How you been, man? How is this weird COVID life been treating you? Because this
well, there's still basketball. We said for a while that this league was becoming a year-round league, but little did we know what that actually was going to mean. This is incredible that we're still sitting here. The finals are about to start. Teams are doing mini camps after not even touching basketballs for a long time or not being anywhere near their teammates. It's absolutely just insane. I covering it has been strange, and I knew it would be, but I think from a fan standpoint, it's got to be even stranger. You have no news for months and months, and then you're watching all these other teams still competing. There's so many things still so unsettled, not just from like a cap standpoint, but from an organizational standpoint. We don't know where games are going to be played. We don't know when or how. And so it's just nice to see guys dribbling basketballs again, even if it's on, you know, one social media guy's like camera where they're just joking around with him or they're shooting three pointers, or you're seeing a guy like Colin Sexton with a vertical that seems astronomically high. And then you get to share that around and get excited about it. So it's a strange time, but I think I've definitely gotten more of an appreciation for like what the sound of a basketball in an empty gym sounds like, just because when that's taken away from you, context starts to set in and you start to have an appreciation again. And I needed that. I think the grind of this year, all the churn of all the free agents and all the movement, there's so much player movement last summer. And I don't think we ever got a chance to really like let that sink in. And then all of a sudden there was nothing. And, you know, we're still sitting here now with all these coaching changes that are being made. Doc's now no longer going to be with the Clippers, which is going to be crazy no matter who they get, whether it's Lou or not. There's so much to talk about right now that it's funny that there's still the same arguments happening on Twitter that were happening in February. And we haven't answered any of those questions.
I think one thing that's, this is all really brought into focus for me is that I really am a creature of habit. And like, there's been so many adjustments, like with the podcast, going through all those months where you don't have the draft free agency to lean on. And maybe that's what it is with Twitter, where it's, hey, nothing's normal, so I'm just going to have the same arguments I've always had. Maybe that's the motivation there. But you're right. I think coming out of this, I'm going to have a lot more appreciation. Like, at this point, I said it before, I'd give up anything for a 30-win Cavs season at this point. Like, if this team overachieves next year, which I think they're going to be a little better than people are anticipating. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, but I don't want to hear complaining about lottery odds. If these guys, and I think Colin Sexton is probably one of the most obvious guys to kind of take the leap next year when you look at what he's done in this double off season that they're getting. If these guys are overachieving, I don't want to hear any complaints here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a scenario where in year three of a rebuild, you want wins, because even if you're in the top two or three in odds, there's no guarantee right now you're still going to pick top three. Yeah. So, I mean, you might as well just win as many as you can and see what happens. And I don't think this is going to be the team we're looking at in a couple months. I think they're going to make moves. This is what the Cavs like to do and what they're going to do. I can't see them heading into this entire season, entirely new season, with the only thing they decide is, oh, are we going to keep Tristan or not? Like, I there's going to be changes being made with this team. And so I think it's just, you try to win with what you have. Whatever gets brought in or shuffled out is an equalizer of some sort, but there's a lot still to be learned from the guys that they have on the team, especially at the guard position. There's a lot of talented guards who have question marks, and what you get out of them, whether that's in the preseason leading into the season, or whether it's, you know, evaluating a 30 win season or not, I think you're going to know a lot more heading into next year about what this Cavs team is or who they're going to be moving forward. And so, I that's what's most exciting to me, is we need to get there. We just need to actually play these games and see what they're going to do. And there was so much potential. There was, you know, a lot of excitement if you were actually paying attention to the Cavs before the start and the shutdown, because they were starting to get some sort of like understanding and cohesiveness of the offense and JB's system. And they looked like they were gaining some confidence. They were a lot of fun to watch near the end of what this shortened season was, and 12 more games, you know, you're not going to go 8-4 or anything like that. But if they go 500 in those, you know, you're kind of in a place where you say, okay, well, we've had half a season of Drummond. We have these guards who, maybe Garland's playing a little bit better, Sexton's been playing better, Nance is, you know, facilitating and his shooting three ball better. It's, there's a lot to like about the Cavs. It's just, they weren't really on anybody's number one national, you know, lookbook for teams to watch on League Pass. And, you know, if you're on the West Coast, it takes a certain someone to fire that game up at 4 p.m. and listen to Austin. But there's some fun to be had with that. And I think that's been the thing that was lost there, is that continued growth under JB and that understanding. But this is where these few weeks will really be helpful, is he's the voice, he's the guy. And as funny as it sounds, he's the first guy to leave a season, enter an off season, and continue that season into the next one that Colin Sexton has had in since high school, which is an absolutely incredible thing to think about. That guy has not had the same coach for two straight seasons since he was in high school. And so, you know, for someone like that, who works as hard as he does and has to figure out who to listen to and who to trust and what communication to have with somebody, how much to have, what information to filter. You know, when we have bosses and we move from place to place, or we have, you know, turnover in our industry or whatever that's happening, it takes time. It takes time to understand what someone wants, but also to speak their language. And I think that's a big part of why we haven't seen a jump yet from Colin, is there's not a system in place that's established and foundational. If you just trade him places with essentially like what happens in OKC, and you give him CP3 to learn under, who's one of his biggest mentors, and you give him Billy Donovan, who's an established head coach, and veterans around him, it's not a stretch to say that you see him in the bubble doing the sorts of things that the guards in Oklahoma City were doing. You know,
absolutely not.
So it's really, you know, context matters, and so does fit, and so does situation. And I think it's going to be big what happens with him this summer.
No, I completely agree. And what he did this past season, I think it doesn't get enough attention. And I'm really for the Cavs trying to win next season, because they're going to be so dependent on young guys. There's going to be growing pains there. But developing that culture and developing accountability is so huge. And I think continuity is going to be massive for Sexton. What I really appreciated about your article, and for those that haven't read it yet, go to uprocks.com. The title Family Matters on the cover, awesome dime cover. Not as good as the OJ Mayo next LeBron dime cover, but it is up there. I really enjoy the story because I think, and this is, I think, a reflection of media today, and I would not consider myself media, maybe like the smallest M media, but I think a lot.
I thought you were just going to go with the former player. I'm not media. I'm a former player.
Oh yeah. As a former high school player, I think a lot of times athletes now are very afraid to open up and to really let people in. And obviously Colin Sexton is someone that's been very guarded, but in today's landscape, any quote can get aggregated. Anything can be taken out of context. It can be misconstrued. And the players also have the ability to put out their own messaging through social media and other things that Sexton hasn't really done a whole lot of. So to get kind of this intimate look at him and kind of what has led him to being the guy that he is today, I really, really appreciate it. It's something that really resonated with me, brought me back to the role basketball played. In my own childhood growing up, it was a bonding thing between my dad and I. And I really, really appreciate it because it's becoming rarer and rarer to get good looks, inside looks at what makes athletes tick these days.
Yeah, I won't go too much into the sausage being made on this one, but when we were kicking around ideas for, you know, how to bring the quality of work that we wanted to bring in through the pandemic, it's really tough when you can't sit down and be with people. And I think, you know, we've really tried, you know, over time to get those looks, even if they're few and far between, because, you know, the realities are what they are with budgets and, you know, travel is expensive. So you're not, you know, with a capital A next to your outlet, sometimes you don't get afforded the opportunity to do those kinds of things as often as you would like. And when no one was traveling, it became harder and harder. And, you know, as we see how difficult it is to make connections with the athletes over Zoom, because other people are, you know, trying to get something out of them. They know they're on camera. They know there's no true one-on-ones. And like you said, you know, aggregation being what it is, tone doesn't really come through and body language can't come through. You're really just given this CNN, you know, like, this is what the guy said while he was on camera situation. And we really wanted to see if there was a way to kind of break through that wall a little bit. And I was just so impressed with what players had been doing in May, June, July by themselves, where maybe they started a podcast, maybe they were taking more pictures, or they were doing photo shoots and just having their girlfriend or their best friend or their manager taking different pictures of them in different outfits because they missed the change. They missed, you know, the difference in the routine. And I see that creativity and I see that passion and that, like, really that desire that the guys had to push that further. And I said, well, why not bring the cover back again in a different way? We've tried it before, but with this, it's you do it. You guys are the ones in control of this. You know, everyone growing up has an idea of like what it would be like if they were on the cover of a magazine for some reason, whether you want to be a movie star, whether you want to be a five-star general and you end up on like Desert Storm trading cards, or whether you wanted to be LeBron James. Like there's something to be said about having yourself, you know, plastered on a billboard or put on a magazine or, you know, whatever that is. And all of those guys share that, you know, a lot. They want to be on the cover of Slam. They want to be on the cover of Dime. They want to be on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, RIP or SI, slightly RIP, but we'll see what ends up with happening with those guys. You know, I wish the best for my former home, but it's hard because they don't always get that chance. And we like to champion, you know, guys that like aren't going to get on ESPN. We're not going to get those guys. They're not going to want to be on our cover anyway, so it's not really a fit to begin with. But, you know, not there's 450 players in the NBA, and it seems like we're always talking about the same 50. But every single one of those guys has a story, whether you're Jamal Murray or whether you're Troy Daniels, you know? And, like, coming up, it's very difficult to craft a spot, find that place, live in it, and then continue to grow. And we thought it'd be really exciting for guys if we said, in blank slate, blank page, what would this be if you really wanted to do it? And Colin was such a great partner and a person to work with on this because, A, like you said, we don't know that much about Colin Sexton. His his thing is he is basketball first, and he truly wants to be someone who lets his game speak first. And then everything underneath it, whether it's helping kids, mentoring, working with Boys and Girls Clubs, starting foundations, doing anything he wants to do, or merely just taking care of his family, all of that would live housed underneath it. But until he has a reason to talk, he didn't want to. And so it was really, I felt humbled, but just so excited about the opportunity because, you know, we've talked about this where we don't know Colin. We just know he works hard. We just know he's competitive. He wants to win. He hates losing. But beyond that, what's driving him? And at the very beginning, it was very clear because he said, it's my family. I want my family on the cover with me. And that was just so powerful to me to see that, because you don't often get the parents behind them who push them year in, year out, day in. Mom is washing their jersey. Dad's driving. You know, mom after games when Collins is crying, picking him back up and helping him get where he needs to go. And, you know, that's an older brother who you're fighting with one-on-one. I mean, not only are these like universal, pretty like understandable stories for anyone who played sports, but it shows that path is real. And that even for someone with as much athleticism as him, high school All-American, went to Alabama, almost beat a team 3-on-5, you know, is the centerpiece to a trade that dissolved like, you know, sand through your hands as the trade was even being made with all the players who were involved in it. And then he's just the last one standing after LeBron James leaves. It's like, Well, how do you get there? And what do you do after that? So I just felt really lucky to kind of go back into the magazine writing sphere for me and to talk to people around him who know him and who can say, yeah, this kid does math flashcards with his niece who makes the same faces he does. And like already has the Young Bull face. And you see the pictures that they send through that they're the same ones they share in their family group chat of him holding her up like she's the, you know, the light in his life and that he has purpose. And you say they do, they move with a purpose. That's their mantra. But now you understand what that purpose is instead of it just being a cliche or being one of those things that you hear athletes say, or they hashtag, or they put in their Instagram comments with, you know, smoke coming out of their nose. And then we're supposed to just accept it. Well, there's a true story behind that stuff. And it just felt like he was the perfect fit for this. And I just felt so lucky that he embraced that opportunity and allowed us a peek inside his world and that he's ready to do that. I mean, we forget that this kid, you know, has been through so much turnover, but he's 21 years old still. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of amazing to think about, but he has so much growth and so much left in him. You know, there's 15 more years of basketball in Colin Sexton, as long as he stays healthy, as long as he works as hard as he does, whether it's with the Cavs or not, you got to kind of root for guys like that. Right. I mean, you want players like that to succeed, to thrive somewhere. And we're seeing that with a lot of these guys who kind of made their way onto these various teams in the bubble and they start shining too. And it's really neat to see those opportunities come to fruition. And it's a reminder of, you know, why we all like basketball. And I felt like I kind of needed that reminder over the last few months too.
Well, I mean, it certainly served that role for me. And it's funny, tying into kind of the family analogy here is, it almost feels like Sexton with the Cavs was going through the first child syndrome, where there was a lot of bumps and bruises and the veterans were figuring out how to deal with a top talent. And now that they've kind of gone through the growing pains with Sexton, they have a little more patience when it comes to Garland, Kevin Porter Jr. They're managing expectations a little bit better. The Cavs have a better understanding of, hey, we need to really nurture these guys. We need to empower them. And it doesn't surprise me to see Sexton being a little more comfortable opening up, because he seems more comfortable with every aspect that he allows us to see. I mean, who he was on a basketball court continues to grow. And when the Cavs traded Jordan Clarkson away, that was an endorsement of Sexton and that was an endorsement of Kevin Porter Jr. And you look at Sexton after that trade and it's 23 points a game, like 3.5 assists, crazy efficiency. Like last year, he scored more points more efficiently than Jamal Murray. And he just, like, he's 21 years old, as you said. It's funny because at this point, I mean, everyone knows me. I'm an optimist when it comes to the Cavs, because, you know, it's, if you're going to be a pessimist, it doesn't hurt any less when things go poorly. But I wasn't high on Sexton coming in. It was,
yeah, okay, I remember that.
Yeah, this there was a lot of Cavs draft picks I didn't like, especially going back to that first Kyrie era. After Kyrie and Tristan, it was pretty downhill for me. But Sexton, he won. Prove me wrong. And I don't know a lot about college players, and I'll openly admit that. So when I hear non-shooting point guard that attacks a basket, plays defense, but to me it was, okay, this isn't really the modern NBA. But he proved me wrong. He added a jump shot. Now you can confidently say he's a great jump shooter. Got me on his side, and then he proved me wrong again that I wasn't high enough. And like at this point, it's clear that the typical gym rat label isn't just lip service when it comes to Sexton. What was your biggest revelation in doing this feature? Something that you didn't really, I guess, have a great grasp on, but kind of caught you by surprise speaking to him?
I think with him, I think one of the bigger things I was surprised about, and maybe it's just because I wasn't aware of this heading in, is the roster of people he has at his disposal to get advice from. He counts among his mentors, CP3 and Dwayne Wade. But he also has a much closer relationship with Kevin Love than I think any of us would have understood or anticipated. I mean, so much is made of, again, body language and these sorts of things. But, you know, as you hear from Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown, like, families fight. And I think the fact that both sides of that equation, both Kevin and Colin, Kevin, who, you know, was reticent to show his emotions a lot of his career and has opened up due to all of the, you know, thought provoking conversation that he's generated as a person and a player, but to lead that into Colin, who, you know, the biggest thing from him, as his sister told me, is once you're in, you're in. It takes a lot to get him to be not a guarded person, but, you know, when you're in the circle, he will be up front, he'll be direct. And that's not just love sometimes. That's dealing with difficult problems, difficult situations, and having hard conversations. Sometimes that happens publicly, or you see, you know, body language from two individuals who are very expressive individuals. Like, that's just how they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the 5-second clip you get. And there's frustration and there's passion and there's a lot of anger around losing basketball games and not knowing who to trust and not knowing who on the staff is going to be there 3 months from now. And those things do boil over. But I think of anything, it made them stronger, because Kevin challenging Colin led to Colin challenging Kevin right back. Kevin can't sulk in the corner or, you know, show that sort of emotion, even if that's a momentary lapse for him or something that just is him spilling that emotion out. Well, Colin is going to push back on him now. And so that's how trust is developed, is when you have friction and you create that friction, do you run from it or does it make you stronger? Does it create a tighter bond? And I think it really did with those two. And so that was a shock to me. It was, oh, he is truly this close with Kevin. Kevin's taken a vested interest in his career. And that's really something you want to hear. You want the vets to do that. I knew Larry was doing that with him and with Darius, and you know, working on angles with them and working on passing lanes and working on, you know, where is the switch man go and what do we do when this happens? And Colin's aware of the passing stuff too. Like, he knows he needs to pass the ball more. He needs to keep his head up. He needs to figure it out. But everywhere he's been the guy who, when everything breaks down, Colin just takes the ball and tries to win. You see it, even if you watch Colin's 8th grade high school championship game, when things are going a certain way, and it's either winning time or it's losing time, Colin was, you know, relied on to be that guy. Then into high school, same way, Alabama, same way. But in the NBA, those guys usually, especially on like teams that are rebuilding or losing, have a hard time adjusting to that, because everyone on your team is a winning time guy. You know, it's just a matter of how they dealt with it and the teams that they were on. So he's had to learn that too. And it just, all of those things take time. And I think in a pressure cooker of tanking or attempting to tank and having to hit on picks and having to make these trades and, you know, vets being shifted in and out for first round picks that are protected that you might not see for 3 or 4 years, it's really hard sometimes for players to just kind of you can't casually accept that in the midst of a season. And that's one of those things, you know, when I've been around or talked to guys on the Cavs, that's been kind of a consistent rallying cry for them, is we know that the wins aren't here right now. how do we find wins from within? And, you know, I think as much as we joked and like made fun of on Twitter, the Ty Lue wins and lessons quote from preseason a couple of years ago, it's so funny because that truly is probably the most important thing the Cavs have had to understand since the beginning of that season. Mm-hmm. Is you have to create lessons out of the losses and find your wins elsewhere when you're used to being a 50 win team that's entire orbit and gravitational pull is surrounded by the most impactful and unique basketball player in the history of the game. Like,
I think the understanding that, hey, we need to start really emphasizing trying to win and trying to create accountability, that's the only way you actually get lessons. That's the only way you actually have usable game film. Because if it's just Colin or whoever getting beat back door because they weren't paying attention, you can't say, okay, well, you just try there, like try harder. No, if you're actually being held accountable and you're going out there and trying to win and making every single possession matter, you can see how you fail in that situation. Okay, so you were trying to do this and he beat you back door. This is what you have to do next time, right? So I think that is the most important thing, because there's going to be growing pains. I mean, you remember it. You add LeBron and Kevin Love to the Cavs and they still start 20-21, and LeBron takes a break because there were so many growing pains from the holdovers. Those guys had bad habits, and that was something. I don't think this next season is really a shift in mentality, because I do think last year, especially I'd say once we hit 2020, it really seemed like they were trying to create accountability, and JB Bickerstaff would bench anybody, whether it's Drummond, Kevin Love, Sexton, Garland, Kevin Porter Jr. They all got chances to start and finish games based on how well they were playing each night. And I think that type of accountability is really important. One thing that surprised me, so I knew that Colin had played on Chris Paul's kind of teams in the past, I guess AAU or camps or whatever, and they had a relationship from that. I didn't realize that he did have the relationship with Wade. Do you know what the origin is of that relationship and kind of what form the mentorship takes between those two? Like, is he working out with these guys at times? Because I didn't understand.
It's more of a conversational thing, you know, with a lot of those guys. He's also really close with Rodney Hood, who, you know, that developed because of Rodney's time with the Cavs. But I think it's more, you know, you meet guys at camps, and Wade was one of those guys. And, you know, AAU circle is so tight that it's possible over time before you become a guy to, you know, foster these relationships. And I think those guys, especially Chris and Dwayne, are like two of the most competitive guys out there, but we also learn from them how family first both of those individuals are. You know, Chris will do anything for his family, and Dwayne is the same way. I mean, what we've seen with Wade's understanding and sensitivity and the growth that he's, you know, shown publicly over the last 12 months is just awe-inspiring. I mean, and we talk so much about what Kevin Love was able to do for the mental health space, but what Dwayne Wade has been able to do for not just the mental health space, but for the family space. And, you know, mental health and family go hand in hand. And that's one of those things that, you know, when you work with nonprofits or you work with after school programs, you start to see, you know, those dynamics come into play. And when you see the relationship they have with their families, and then you see Colin's relationship with his family, it makes perfect sense. He would gravitate towards those guys and that they would gravitate toward him. They see the drive and the hunger and the competitive streak, but they also see the sensitivity. They see, you know, the reservation to be publicly, I'm top dog, you know, like he's either going to show it or he's not. It's not going to be a lot of talk. It's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be the person who's going to tweet out, you know, the apologies will be as loud as the disrespect. Like he's just, that's not how he's driven, you know, and there's nothing to be said one way or the other as being right and wrong. It's just, he's not that guy. He doesn't need to find that. His motivation's found, you know, it's kind of a consistent drumbeat rather than the ups and downs of like, things are going well, things are going poorly. And then like, I have to create that to build myself back up, which is, LeBron's capable of that tactic. If he can't find a doubter, he can't find something that's creating drama for him, you know, he's either going to quote the Da Vinci Code or hold up the Godfather book, or he's just going to get mad about voting. Like,
yeah,
something is going to drive him when he needs it, because he'll flip that switch and he finds it. And so I think that was just such an illuminating thing for me, is, you know, you start to see the DNA of certain guys. Russell Westbrook's a very similar individual. His family is everything for him. You know, like when you see Russ, the most you ever get out of Russ is when you see him around his family. Like, that's when you're like, oh, Russ is a human being. Like, what he shows to the media is not what he's not. That's not who he is. Like, you're at work. When you send emails, you send professional emails. You don't send the text you send your friends. So like, why would you answer media questions the same way that you would talk to your friends and your family? Like, it's different. But so it's the closeness of that circle is really amazing. 'Cause he said, like, when I need to learn how to win or how to figure out what to do coming off back-to-back losses, you know, I'll talk to Kevin. If I need to figure out, you know, how do you get to that championship level, I'll ask Dwayne. If I need to understand what's it like working with a coach or working with a teammate, you know, and trying to feel them out and figure it out, you talk to Chris. Like, having that resource and that encyclopedia of knowledge, I mean, are there two, and you add Kevin to that with his longevity and his IQ for the game. I mean, those three individuals that, it's, you're hard pressed to find three more guys who are more of a font of knowledge than those three with what they can bring you. And so the hope is that he draws from other guys on the Cavs, but he also becomes that for the guys who come in a couple more years. And, you know, you learn a lot from a guy like Larry Nance, who's seen both sides of that. He saw the end of Kobe. He saw the end of LeBron in Cleveland. Now he's like 26 and he's supposed to be this like vet. Which is what you're seeing in Boston is the same thing. All these Boston kids now are 23, 24, but, oh, well, we're supposed to be the winning guys who teach the new 19-year-olds. And that expedites the evolutionary process, but also the maturity. And not everyone's equipped for that, but it's very clear Colin's equipped to that. And so if he can help push Darius along, if he can help push Dylan or KPJ along or whoever they end up taking, unless that pick is traded for a vet or something, like, that's going to be how that bridge is built. And when we talk about, you know, the leaps, it's not just individual leaps. It's turning these 4-point losses into 3-point wins and winning the home games before you go lose the away games, instead of just coming out flat and losing by 12 to Orlando. Mm-hmm. Like, you add all those up over the course of a season, then you're talking about a 35 win team. And, you know, that's almost the playoffs in the East. And heck, even Charlotte almost made the playoffs. Like, they were pretty close before all of the shutdown happened. They were right there. And it's because you have vets who will you to close wins in the East. And it's the same as the NFL. I mean, you win your home games and you win the games that Vegas picks you to win against bad teams on the road, and you're 9-7. Like, and then you're in the playoffs. Exactly.
And I think that's very achievable for the Cavs. Like, I think with the growing pains, like, I think they have more talent than people give them credit for. But if you have kind of a low 30s win season, all of a sudden you have a proof of concept. It's okay, now we have things that we can identify that you guys need to work on. We know what type of role players we can bring in that can help accentuate your strengths and the things you've developed. But it does seem like they really are emphasizing character, work ethic, and making sure that there are leaders around. And that's a thing that I really appreciate, because it shows growth from the organization. And obviously Colin's a huge part of that. He's the heart and soul of this team. He's someone that they can count on. And I mean, for me, what I'm counting on in this quarantine is DoorDash, because I have counted on restaurants and they're counting on me. And while dining rooms might be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with new contactless delivery drop-off settings. I'm a big fan of the contactless delivery. It's really good. It saves you from those awkward interactions. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you use download the DoorDash app and enter code BlueWire. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BlueWire. Don't forget, that's code BlueWire for $5 off your order with DoorDash. We're also brought to you by BetOnline. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be in it on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Harden, let me tell you,
got through it, man.
Let me tell you, it's a lot less fun when Carter isn't here to take the back nine for me. That's a bit of a marathon, but you know what? Like Colin Sexton, I'm just going to push through it. I'm just going to keep working at it.
Wins,
you know,
and what? Lessons, baby.
Wins and lessons. That's all it is. Was there anything that didn't make the cut in the article that you found interesting, but just kind of weren't able to fit into the narrative or expand upon?
Yeah, you know, there was some stuff that about Colin's relationship to mentorship that I felt like really could have been its own standalone piece. He and I talked about, you know, what happens when you meet your heroes. And that's one of those things you don't really get a lot out of the young kids, is they're so quick. Well, there's two sides to it, right? You see Luka exchanging jerseys with LeBron with the biggest smile on his face in the whole world, because that to him is validation that he made it. And then you see other guys who won't even bring up the guys who are older in the league because they want to beat them. And if you show that you grew up idolizing these guys, or, you know, you want to be them, or that you wore their shoes, like it kind of discounts who you are or how hard you're working, because, you know, you're not there yet. You know, it's hard because all of these dudes, we're in this era where there are so many good older players and so many good young players who are good right away. A lot of great 19 to 23 year olds who are playing with dudes who are 37, 38, who've been in the league for a long, long time. And, you know, it's nice to have that because there's knowledge sharing and there's, you know, the past and the future kind of operating at the same time when you see Giannis play LeBron or Luka play LeBron. But there's also this understanding of, well, these guys probably were at, you know, they have their own camps, and a lot of these kids played at these camps and probably met these dudes for the first time. What do you think that interaction was like? You know, how did they interact? Was the dude dismissive? Did he show up late? Was he there interacting with the campers the whole time, you know, with a smile on his face, putting in those hours, being there the whole time and doing individual instruction? And did he snap a picture with every kid? Did he take videos and selfies? Did he, you know, help when someone FaceTimed their little brother who said it's their favorite player? Like, did those things happen? And most of the time, yeah, they did, because they're human beings. And most of the guys in the NBA are pretty normal guys who also were campers at camps of other players. But every once in a while it happens where a guy either didn't take time or he just wasn't very nice. And you forget that, you know, all of us have first interactions and first impressions of people. And, you know, if something doesn't go well, when you meet somebody, you can kind of always remember that, you know? And I think it was really cool to see that Colin acknowledged that to me. And, you know, it's a very big thing to admit that, you know, he's not going to name names because he's that kind of dude who's not going to just like put that out there so it gets aggregated, but the trust that he would have to say, you know, this is what's going on. And I want to make sure that when I sit down with these kids and I am at the Boys and Girls Club, or I have my camp, or I'm at a high school and I'm organizing a youth session, I'm there for every single one of them because they're going to remember this forever. And, you know, that wasn't the original ending to my piece, but, you know, you kind of push forward, you figure out where you want to be and what it wants to evolve into as a, you know, as the piece comes to an end. And for him, there was a lot of that mentorship that didn't make it into the piece. But it really sounded like this is something both in Cleveland, but in Georgia, that matters to him. And then you start to understand, okay, well, it's the same way he treats his niece. It's the same way he's going to treat every member of his family. And, you know, he knows how important those moments are for people and for the development of them. You know, there is someone who didn't shake his hand, you know, 10 years ago. And that there was someone like Chris Paul who showed a vested interest in him as a person first and a basketball player second. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, those things are so important to admit. And I think the awareness of someone at that age is kind of astounding to me that he is able to take a step back and recognize that. I think that was a really cool part of the process for me. That and, you know, his training with his trainer, you know, and the work that they put in and how they challenge each other. I had no idea his trainer was from Flint, Michigan. And it was funny that he was like, oh, you know, Colin plays like a kid from Flint. Well, I mean, who else do we know from Flint in the NBA? Like, there's some pretty successful dudes who have come out of there who have an attitude and, you know, who really push forward and do everything that they can to be bigger, better players. And I think, you know, that was a cool way to approach Colin, that he does have that fight in him. And I can see why he might turn some guys off, even as a kid, you know, see someone that competitive who's bent down and who's going to like play you full court when you're 10 at an AAU camp.
Oh,
and,
buddy, I hated that guy. Hated that guy.
I can see it when, you know, his dad's talking about, oh, sometimes we would change his hair, or we would ask a kid to swap numbers with him at a camp so no one knew that it was Colin, and they change his name and he'd go by his middle name, or and I'm like, you know, these are the details that like they help you understand who Colin Sexton is. And then so when you do see him in that bent stance and you do see him mean mugging and making the face, it's not because it's inauthentic. He's mm-hmm. always been this way. He was making this face when he was playing Uno when he was 5 years old and someone slapped a draw four on him. Like, this is who Colin Sexton is. And so, you know, origin stories are kind of my passion for the NBA, for sports. I like knowing, where did a kid come from? Who was involved in his life? How did he get here? And can he look back on it? If he hasn't had time to do that yet, that's because his story is still being written. But mm-hmm. there are inflection points. There are times where you can say, I've worked this hard, now acknowledge it, let it all in, move on, and then continue into tomorrow. And I think that the tomorrow is a very bright one for him.
I completely agree. And it's, I'm blown away. Like, that is like thinking about what you're describing, like the self-awareness and being able to acknowledge, hey, like, it's difficult when you do meet your idols and it doesn't go the way you intended. It just kind of rubs you the wrong way. Like, there's just kind of an acknowledgement of self there that I really find impressive. And like, it's something that like I work on, and I'm older than he is. And with Sexton, and I think in players in general, like a big thing for me in the last few years is like, I really, really do enjoy getting to hear about these guys more and more as people and kind of what makes them tick. And I try to keep in mind, because I think this is something that gets lost these days, where we forget that we're talking about people and we forget that we're interacting with people. It's not just star athletes. It's when you're dealing with someone on social media. There's a lot of conversations that go on there that make me think, okay, here is two people that have never been punched in the face. And maybe they have been punched in the face and they just forget that they're talking to a person, but we detach ourselves so much. Yep. And we expect so much from people, and it's just not a healthy balance. So when I'm offering up sports critiques or I'm offering up analysis, like even when I'm being critical, I always want to keep in mind, you never know who's listening. You never know if it's a family yep. member, if it's the player. Would I be willing to say this to somebody's face? And I'm going to be wrong a billion times over, but if I'm going to be wrong, I at least want to do it in a way where, one, if it is kind of like you're dumping on a guy, you're doing it in a fun manner, not in an aggressive,
tongue in cheek, and yeah, not to say, you know, that you're not tearing down this person as a person. That's my big thing. Is like, it's one thing when you people make comparisons on Twitter and they'll call somebody, you know, the like Costco, whatever, or the Kirkland brand of somebody, exactly. Or
AliExpress.
Yeah. And so like, I, you know, there's an understanding that these are jokes. And look, I, if someone's offended when that happens, then first thing to say is, I'm sorry. That's the thing. Exactly. I think like, and my big harping point on so much of the discourse is people treat every interaction like it's one to be won and lost. And it's mm-hmm. like, there's no room for nuance when you want to win and you're trying not to lose. Like, there's growth to be had in not necessarily meeting the middle, but just like having the conversation. Like, you can start somewhere that's way over here, and eventually just like the argument gets to a place where that person is then still, it's arguing the other side by the end of it because they just want to keep arguing. And you're like, right. Yo, like, just slow down for a second. there's still people attached to this at the end of the day. And like you said, yeah, I mean, like someone might want to drive to Temecula by the end of this. Like this is always, you have to understand that there's always going to be someone willing to make that drive. But if they do, or like take picture with the dude, like be the person who's willing to say like, okay, I'm sorry that this got out of hands.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, especially in the sports realm, like I'm always going to be a little tongue in cheek because this is ridiculous. Like sports as a concept is ridiculous. Like it is
what we're dealing with right now. Like nothing serious when everything is serious.
No, it's not life and death. And I think people need to enjoy and live in the moment a little more, especially when it comes to sports teams. Like I always say that the decision was one of the best things that happened to me as a Cavs fan, because it kind of put everything in perspective where I was living and dying with every result, and what I went through those following years, I got a little bit better at it. Of course, I had to be a little more rational because I was writing about the team, I was podcasting about the team, but like I legitimately look forward to every Cavs game, even if it's a 19-win season, because there's opportunities for growth within each game. You're still watching basketball, and that it's, I mean, compared to some of the other things out there, like it's not a bad way to pass the time. When it comes to Sexton's growth, before we wrap this all up, what do you kind of foresee with him? Like what areas of growth do you want to see the most from him? Because I got my answer, but I don't want to pollute yours.
No, really. You know, I think it's the same one that all of us are wanting. You know, you want him to facilitate and to be involved in the flow and to not stop the ball. It's one of those things that you know he sees. And then sometimes like after, and that's the thing that's been funniest for me of watching Kevin, is Kevin will let him, like he'll give him the leash to hang himself sometimes on the floor. And like, then he does it and the shot does not go the way that he meant, or he gets triple teamed, he throws something up, or the shot clock ends and he shoots this absurd shot that's nowhere near the hoop. And then you see him like look at, you know, he'll put his head down or he'll look at Kevin, and Kevin kind of almost gives you like the I told you so just right in the moment. And you're like, that's the best way to learn sometimes, is this shot is not the shot that's going to win game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. This is a second quarter shot against the Boston Celtics and a 20-point loss in a season that won't matter. But like, you have to trust that that person will learn from that instead of him continuing to create it as a routine where then he'll continue to do that. Like, we know who Jordan Clarkson is. Jordan Clarkson's going to take that shot, and he doesn't care because he Jordan wants Clarkson to make that time, shot. Maybe. And it's going to be Jordan Clarkson time for the rest of his life. Like, and that's okay. But what you don't want is Colin to become the guy that says, oh, I'm going to drive into traffic, I'm going to throw up a wild shot. And then there will be, like you said, there is no accountability. And that's the thing for me, is accountability is a word that gets thrown around a lot, but what are you accountable for? You know, once you identify that, it's easier to grow. So I think the big thing for him is valuing possessions and understanding, you know, where does the ball need to be and when. And that's a big thing. Again, when I talked to Larry back in December when I was in Cleveland, he really mentioned, he said, you know, we look at film and the guys know it, but it's that little shift of seeing it and making the pass before everyone else sees it. It's like part reaction, but it's also part acknowledgement, film study, which with Colin, he's so mathematically focused in his brain. He loves flashcards. He loves Uno, obviously, Connect Four, you know, anything that's like math related, pattern related. And so you see him wanting to make that play, but sometimes there's that like push and pull of act versus react. And in young guys, the clock just is different for them. So he just needs to know what's the angle, when, what's the play, and do it. Don't think about it. And once you go into acting instead of thinking, and usually that happens to guys around year 3 who aren't Luka Doncic, like if you're not him, like you just have to have enough acquired reps to get to a place where that's it. And so I think with him, that's the big thing, is, you know, acting instead of reacting, especially when he's the primary facilitator. He knows he wants to continue to shoot better, which he acknowledged to me, he knows everyone says I can't shoot. I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna prove I can. Well, this is next. Like, I'm gonna prove that I can make the right. Like, you may never see him have a double digit assist season. He's not probably going to be that guy. But if it's 5 and the passes go where they need to go and the offense is crisp and it's within the flow of the offense and the turnovers are down and he's doing all the things he needs to do. I mean, I think we saw extreme like improvement from him on the defensive side of the ball last year. Well, this year, whatever year we're currently in. I think that was such an encouraging sign for me is the instincts are there. What happens next? And for DeAndre Ayton is a good example of that. Like he knows what he's supposed to do, but you get caught thinking about it. And all of us in our daily lives, it's the same way. Like we know what we're supposed to do, but when we think it's that little moment of hesitation that sometimes when the mistakes are made in our lives and in basketball, it's just a microcosm and it's just magnified 100,000 times, you know, beyond that. So facilitating, continuing to improve on the defensive side of the ball, and really taking ownership of it becoming his team. You know, you hear JB say he's the spiritual leader of the Cavs. Okay, well, that can mean a number of things. And Brett Brown loves talking about spirit, and boy, did the Sixers have a lot of it. But sometimes that's not a good thing. What kind of spirit are you bringing? What is your compass? Where is it pointing? And if you're passing that torch to him, that leadership role, him being more vocal, and that includes being more vocal, not just on the court, not just, you know, doing it in the locker room, which I think he's starting to feel that out and do that and develop that more. But we look to those guys, the fans do, the coaches do, the teammates do, to say the things that you need to say after wins and losses. And I think he's embracing that. I think he understands that. And I think that's something you're going to see a lot more of him moving forward. And I think, you know, it's easy to parse through social media posts and pictures and short video clips, but we're sure seeing a lot more of him front facing than we ever did. And those guys have to basically sign off on those pictures going on the social media feed. So I think he's ready. I think he's to a point where he's essentially saying to himself, this is the next step for me. And so whether it's developing on film, developing on the court, or developing his voice as a human being, as a player, and as a leader of that team, I think those are the three areas where I would identify him having market improvement. And if he doesn't, I think he's the first person who will say that, you know, he's disappointed in that and he'll want to be better. And then he'll just make a jump in January. Well, whatever January would be for the new season. And then we'll say, oh, we were wrong about Colin Sexton again.
Yeah. Man, his July is going to be fire.
He's going to be killing it June 15th next year.
I find that super interesting. So for me, like what we saw kind of down the stretch where he's at that 3.5-4 assists a game, like to me, I'm pretty comfortable with that. Like I want to see more on the defensive end. Because I really think that he has a lot of potential on that end. It was something that he contributed when he was at Alabama. He's got that big wingspan. And the comparison I've made is between him and Donovan Mitchell, where they have the same height, long wingspan.
Similar stat lines.
Incredibly similar stat line. And Mitchell was that kind of 3.5 assists a game guy, and he's still pretty much that. And they're both in that combo guard mold, right? Which is why the Cavs said, hey, we're going to go get a point guard in Darius Garland to go alongside him. We need kind of that primary initiator, even though Collins probably going to be the play finisher. He's going to be the guy that goes out there and probably leads the team in scoring. And I think that's going to be the case for the foreseeable future here because he's just so damn good at it at a young age.
And somebody has to score, right?
Right.
Like, on a bad team, somebody has to score points. If Donovan was on the Cavs, what Donovan's numbers would be, he'd be scoring 30 points a game and everybody would be talking about shot selection and this and that. But you put good players around a guy like that, and it's amazing how the conversation changes around someone, you know.
And on defense, it reminds me of what Zach Lowe used to say with Devin Booker, which was when the game is closer. And towards the end of the game, that's when Booker starts making plays. And Sexton made those big time plays. His impact for the season was poor, and I think he'd probably be one of the first to tell you that. But there were games that were won because of his defensive plays. And if he scores at that same level he did after the Clarkson trade, and he's adding defense, and he gets the assist to like around 4. That all of a sudden, like you're talking about like an all-star caliber season. He might not be an all-star because the wins aren't there, but that is okay. That's a cornerstone guy. And to me, it's, I'm so encouraged by everything I've heard from him. It's, I'm convinced that he's going to be a guy that hits the ceiling. And I think maybe we sometimes rush to have the second contract conversations too soon, where we try to ask what a rookie ceiling's
going to be. You would think we would learn from the Jaylen Brown thing.
Dude, you think, look at Jamal Murray. He had a worse rookie season than Murray's Garland.
A perfect example.
9 points a game. Like, look at Jimmy Butler. He came in at like 23 years old and averaged 9 a game and struggled as a rookie. And now he led a team to the NBA Finals.
I mean, Brandon Ingram, right? Like, guys need the right fit. They need the right situation, but they also need the light to come on. And progress is not linear. This is like one of those post-it notes that we put up constantly. You'll hear Robbie Callen say it at Dime all the time. I'll say it all the time. It's so true when it comes to these guys, especially on rebuilding teams. There are going to be 2 week stretches where dudes just can't get out of funks because they don't have the ability to draw from what winning teams can draw from. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike Conley looked like he wasn't even an NBA player for a few months this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most
Lowry took until he was 26 to like find a team.
And these are professional leaders who we all believe in. And it's like, okay, like you don't have to. The problem is that success, like, legitimately is its biggest downfall. Like, mm-hmm. the more successful young guys come into the league, Jason Tatum's only 19 years old. Like, okay, well, Jason Tatum had some bad games. Are we supposed to just like give up on him? Oh, wait, now he's an MVP candidate. Like, it's like, you just got to allow guys to kind of like come into their own. But everything is knee jerk. Everything is instantaneous. Everything is dissected into 8 second clips. And you're supposed to just navigate that if you're someone who likes basketball, instead of saying, okay, well, what were his last 30 games versus these 30? And then you're like, oh, before and after the All-Star numbers, wow, there's actual progress here. Well, I thought he sucked. Wasn't he like in these per rankings, like the 16th worst player in the NBA? And you're like, well, again, context matters. Did you watch the games? Like, there is a way to combine advanced statistics, but also empirical evidence into a complete picture instead of just like ignoring one in favor of the other. But that, of course, would require compromise and people to get along, which that's never going to happen.
So. Yeah. I mean, we had Seth Partnow on the podcast, and he basically said, like, the single number stats, you really shouldn't read into those, or a lot of those stats, when a guy's young. Like, it may give you a picture of, yes, this guy is
here's the secret. Here's the secret to all of this is any guy is going to look bad on a bad team. If your team loses a lot, your advanced metrics are going to be down because your team's bad. Your all-comers are going to be terrible because you lost by 15 a game every game. So no matter how good you were, your team still lost by 15. So your minus is 15.
And if you're putting up big numbers, it's losing. It's empty stats because it's on a bad team.
Yeah, Devin Booker all of a sudden in the bubble became not Devin Booker. Oh, look at those anymore. Stats.
They have an impact. Of like, it's the craziest thing. And I think that this is going to be a year. I'm predicting it. I think this is the year where Sexton really gets a lot of attention and kind of gets people on his side. I think as well, more as he opens up, and your piece is a great example of it, I think it's going to help more and more people get invested, because I think he's someone worth investing in. Like, I think no matter where he ends up, like the ride is going to be a lot of fun with him. And maybe sometimes it's easier for guys that have lower stakes. Like, it takes nothing for a guy like Delly to open up, because like everything's gravy. Like, undrafted player, he found his way onto the team and people can revel in those stories. But when you have a guy like Sexton, where he's coming in replacing Kyrie, he takes that head on by wearing number two. There's a lot of expectations that come with it. And I can see for someone that's less guarded than Sexton, it can be difficult to kind of overcome that.
Yeah, you know, you talk about like market improvement and one of those things that you want to place bets on. I mean, you hope that Colin will have most improved player votes. Like, that would be kind of like the measure of success for this team, is if he gets enough recognition, that he's doing enough of it to get recognized, then it means that it happened.
But not to cut you off, but I can just see next year people are going to be like, wow, he's averaging 23, 24 points per game, or like 4 assists. Wow, look at his efficiency. He's shooting like 46% from the floor, 40% from three. And then they're going to go and they're going to look at last year's stats and the efficiency. Oh, wow. And they're going to be like, oh, no, actually, he's not improved. Those are empty stats.
Yeah, those are empty stats. But the big thing is, does Garland kind of like get dragged along with it? Is his improvement in year two with confidence? I mean, we know Garland's capable of some insane things.
Did you see it? Chris Fedor said the thing today. He said the thing. He tweeted out.
Did he get 20 pounds of muscle?
Oh, no. He didn't say that thing. But he said, and I'm so excited to talk to Carter about this because I've labeled him a Garland hater. But he mentioned that, like, when he talks to executives around the team, coaches and all that, the guy that is impressing people the most and kind of shocking people is Garland. That,
well, there we go. Yeah, he's capable of it. Everyone on that team will tell you.
Dude, I'm a believer.
What this guy does in practice. Yeah,
those guys can work together. And I know people bring up Dame and CJ, but, like, look at Lowry and Van Vliet. They're both shorter than those two. And, like, you look at Sexton's wingspan. Those two can work together. I think next year you're going to see KPGA in that kind of Harden role off the bench where they're kind of staggering and maybe all three finish games together. But that young group of guys, they seem to really get along. They seem to kind of buy into the same thing. And I'm a believer in it. Like, even if it fails, I think it's a worthwhile thing to be invested in this group.
Yeah, it'd be hilarious if that team had like 4 point guards and like 6 power forwards. But I mean, that's where we're headed. So,
I guess my question plus point guards.
Yeah, my question for you is, like, what is your ideal? Like, what's the starting five look like if the team doesn't make any major changes?
The other thing is,
or even best five, closing five, because I think who starts the game doesn't really matter for this team, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, my dream is still flipping Drummond here, and then you bring in Tristan to mentor Okongwu or something like that. So, I mean, I would really like to see that. But I mean, I'd love it if Garland, Sexton, and KPJ were able to finish games together, that they were able to improve those minutes together. I think they'll stagger them throughout the game. But I wouldn't be surprised if midway through the season you see Garland, Sexton, and Windler starting together, because they're saying that they think Windler can start, like that he's going to take Jetty's job at some point. And if that happens and you have a bench unit where it's KPJ, Jetty, God, why am I drawing a blank right now? Oh, man. I was talking about this earlier today, and I was like, everybody on the bench is 6'6 and up. which I'm all for.
They got Jordan Bell now.
Yeah, there you go. But Larry Nance, Thompson, whoever is there, like they have some real depth, and it's going to be interesting. Like, it's young depth and it's going to make mistakes, but like, if guys aren't playing hard, there's another young guy that's trying to win minutes.
Really, I mean, Jetty's paid to be like above replacement forward, so if he's not starting, that means not only are they getting value out of his contract, but the team has improved. And, like, you know, Jetty wants the ball in his hands, he wants to make big plays, but I think he's very much a hot hand guy. He's one of those dudes where if he's hit a couple threes in a row, you ride him and you let him score 16 like in a flash. But if he's, you know, he starts 0-for-6 or, you know, 1-for-7 or something like that, there are times where you can say, you know, today's not Jetty's game. If you have someone else, whether that's Kevin or whether that's, you know, Dylan or someone else on the team, even if Exum is the one who has to take some of those minutes, like, that will really help not just the Cavs win some of those games, but it should help Jetty mentally to allow himself to then, you know, get back into a rhythm and not feel like every single missed shot matters more than it does. And I think that's a worry for some of these guys on this team, is like, they get so hard on themselves when they miss these shots that are open, that are good shots. And it really does. It snowballs because there's not a LeBron to go pick them up and score 12 in a row. Like, if KPJ is that guy, that'd be awesome. Like, that'd be amazing. But
it'd be unreal, right? And I was really happy that we were able to officially break the story that he is at least 6'6", because that there was always no way that day was 6'4". I was glad that we got that. But you know what? Once Jetty moves to the bench, and Exum was the other guy I was forgetting. Once Jetty moves to the bench, he's not defending the other opponent's best wing every single night. I think
how much that has to take out of him day in and day out is just, I mean, I'm glad he's open to the opportunity of doing that, but like,
He's paid. That's exhausting. He's paid as an 8th, 9th man, which we're getting value for him. Like, he just needs to be in the proper role. But man, I really, really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. It's great to talk Cavs. I think it's a miracle that there's legitimate things to talk about in September for the Cavs. I mean, normally there would be, because normally this would be a normal training camp, but we don't live in that reality. So again, to all our listeners, make sure you check out the article on Colin Sexton. Go check out Dime. Do you have anything else that you want to plug at this time? Got anything else going on?
No, and you know, it's just, you know, continue to check out the coverage heading into the finals. Yaron Weisman had an amazing piece on the Morris twins that we were lucky enough to publish today. I mean, that guy's brilliant, and you know, obviously everyone saw what he's capable of at Bleacher Report, but we just felt like, I mean, this piece is insanely good. So read that, because it's way better than my pieces. But you know, just, you know, Robbie and Bill do such an amazing job of covering the day-to-day. And, you know, Katie Heinel's bubble watches are always incredible. And she's, you know, one of the most gifted writers that we have in all of basketball. And she's one of those people that sees the game the way that we're talking about it, where these individuals are individuals and they're human beings. And something is lost in the Zoom interviews, and something is going to be lost in the bubble and what's happening right now. And we want to get to the center of who human beings are and their stories that they want to tell. And, you know, I'd say read those writers, and then once in a while I'll write something. And if it's decent enough to podcast about, I'm always going to be here to do that. But I, you know, if they're doing their job and doing it well, then it means, we're doing something right. So I don't want to plug anything. I think social media was a mistake. So,
I mean, it 100% is a mistake. It is tearing apart a society, but make sure you guys check out oprocks.com to check out the article and everything else he's got going on there. Hey, you got at least social media. You got shared by the Kaz account today.
I know. I did see that. That was pretty big news. You know, it's pretty sweet to see that right above, you know, we need to make sure and vote. You know, it's the gravity of the situation isn't lost on me. Mm-hmm. You know, those, it's important over the next 30, 50 days or so to really do some good in the world again. So that would be my plug, is make sure you're registered, get it done, and let's make the changes that need to be made to get us healing again. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, man. I really do appreciate this.
Oh, you know, I'll talk Cavs any day, dude.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know what? I love you for it. So thanks again, man. Really do appreciate it. Big thanks to all our listeners. Remember, go to UpRocks. And if you want to support our podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Make sure you're registered to vote. Stay safe. And until next time, go Cavs.